Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Yes, and I did hear the words unseasonably warm just a few moments ago. Don't know if that applies necessarily to where you might be listening, but yes, we have a little, it's really very little, but a minor warming trend in parts of the upper Midwest, and that, I'm sure, is welcome news to you. You can celebrate somebody else enjoying warmer weather, even if you don't, right? Consider it a test of character. And good morning. It's now 6:05 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. And I'm Austin Hill, honored to have you with us weekday mornings 6 till 8 as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful. How is the state of the family in the United States of America? I think about that periodically, especially hosting this program and talking with some of the very insightful experts, people who are constantly surveying national trends and cultural trends and such, and reporting on that. Dr. George Barna, the prolific researcher, he comes to mind. He's had some rather striking things to say about the family. Just last week, a gentleman named Bob Lapine, he is the anchor, the host of the Family Life Today broadcast with Dennis Rainey. And Bob Lapine was here on this program last week and actually threw out a figure, which was news to me, not surprising, but they've done their research at the Family Life Today organization and crunched the numbers and quantified this. No less than 40% of all families today are comprised of what we would regard as a blended family. Children coming from different parents, you know, a single dad and a single mom, they get married and blend the families together, those kinds of things. The Family Life Today organization has taken some extraordinary measures to try to begin to address the needs of blended families. They are unique. My wife and son and I, we don't have a blended family. I wouldn't really know exactly where to start in terms of trying to figure out all the dynamics of blended families. I've certainly observed that with other people, but I don't know it firsthand. And the Family Life Today folks, however, are intimately involved in this. And coming up later this morning at about 7:35, we will welcome back to our program a gentleman named Ron Deal. Ron, D-E-A-L. He's a marriage and family expert, works with the Family Life Today group. He's also got a new book out on smart step families, and we'll talk about some of these extraordinary demands and challenges and the ways in which the church can step up and meet the needs of step families. That's coming up later this morning. Also, our great friend Bill English, publisher of BibleandBusiness.com, some very interesting insight on some of the emotional dynamics behind businesses and their business owners, something that I like to champion, a cause that I like to champion here on this program, the plight of the small business owner in your local community. So Bill English joins us for that coming up later this morning as well. Now, when we return, we welcome back to the studios Dr. Kent Kaiser. He's a professor at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Dr. Kaiser, of course, comes from a very rich history, having worked in governmental positions with the U.S. Census Bureau and the Secretary of State's office in the state of Minnesota. He knows government and the workings of government and public policy very, very effectively. What are we to make of this rather, I want to call rather historic speech yesterday from the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and speaking before the United States Congress. He's done this before, but the conditions and the situation this time around are very different. What does it mean, and what does it mean specifically for the Christian living in the United States of America? We'll speak with Dr. Kent Kaiser about this coming up. So stand by for that. It's next. It's now 6:08, and you're listening to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
I know that no matter on which side of the aisle you sit, you stand with Israel.
Good morning. It's 6:09 Central Time. That's the voice of a man named Benjamin Netanyahu. He is the Prime Minister of the Nation of Israel, speaking before a joint session of the United States Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives, and the Senate, all gathered in one building, which is kind of rare that they all sit down collectively together. There he is speaking to both sides of the aisle, as he said, joining us with some analysis on what this historic speech means and specifically why it's relevant to Christians in the U.S. Our great friend Dr. Kent Kaiser, professor at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, where our Faith Radio Network is headquartered. Dr. Kaiser, good to see you again. Thanks very much for jumping in.
Thanks for having me on.
We got some more audio pieces of the Prime Minister's speech yesterday, and we'll get to those in a few moments. What is the big significance of this speech as you see it? What's your starting point?
Well, let me just start by saying, you know, this was a speech that was really elegantly written and masterfully delivered, and from a professor's perspective, it contained all the elements and devices that you dream of having in a speech. And you might think, well, of course it would, because he's a world leader. But honestly, we haven't heard a speech like this from our own leaders for a long, long time, the kind of speech that really tried to move people and you know, it didn't use some of the devices that we warn against that some of our leaders, like Obama, sometimes use, like the straw man arguments or things like this. It's a very strong speech. Gave anyone who is, you know, on the fence about supporting Israel a reason to support Israel. Gave those members of Congress who might be inclined to side with the Obama administration, gave them a reason to support Israel, and I, you know, with the way he reached out the olive branch to Obama and praised Obama in the speech, it really took off the partisan tone that the Obama administration sort of injected into the speech. So it gives those Democrats who are on the fence that excuse to support Israel.
And I hadn't thought of it in quite such detailed terms, but I'll tell you, I did not watch this live real time. After the speech had happened, I took a break from the other things that I was doing yesterday. I was reading some of the analysis. People were saying many of the same things that you were saying, Dr. Kaiser. And I thought, yeah. Well, let me log on and see what happened. Oh, my goodness. And one of the things, you said something a moment ago, one of the things that jumps out about me about Mr. Netanyahu, and I think it probably resonates with a lot of Americans, this man is not only gracious and diplomatic towards the U.S. and much of the rest of the world, he cares intimately about his country. And he doesn't apologize for that. He wants to do the absolute best, first and foremost, for Israel, as right he should. I don't hear that from our president or from Republicans. I don't hear that same kind of passion about America from most leaders here in the U.S. Maybe Governor Scott Walker as he emerges onto the national stage. But it's almost like we're embarrassed to be too pro-American anymore. And Netanyahu reminds me of that.
Right. And he's really got a historic perspective. I was blessed to be able to see him several years ago when he came here to Minneapolis. And you're right. He's a very caring person. I mean, just so genuine. But even in the speech, and I do want to read one excerpt because it's just so trying to bring people in, especially Christians, because, I mean, obviously he knows that, you know, mostly Christians in America. And he wrote, he said, we're an ancient people. In our nearly 4,000 years of history, many have tried repeatedly to destroy the Jewish people. Tomorrow night on the Jewish holiday of Purim, we'll read the book of Esther. We'll read of a powerful Persian viceroy named Haman who plotted to destroy the Jewish people some 2,500 years ago. But a courageous woman, Queen Esther, a courageous Jewish woman, Queen Esther, exposed the plot and gave for the Jewish people the right to defend themselves against their enemies. The plot was foiled. Our people were saved. And today the Jewish people face another attempt by yet another Persian potentate to destroy us. Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, spews the oldest hatred of anti-Semitism with the newest technology. He tweets that Israel must be annihilated. So it really brings together that biblical story into the historic present. And just, you don't see leaders doing that in speeches.
No, not hardly. I want to, Aaron, if we could have the soundbite of Mr. Netanyahu complimenting President Obama, have that ready to go here. Dr. Kaiser, Prime Minister Netanyahu just went through a litany of things that President Obama had done mostly privately, like, you know, in private phone calls and those kinds of things. We're being attacked here, Mr. President. Can you assist? President Obama sends in relief aid or what have you. Mr. Netanyahu was publicly very gracious and brought to light some of the things that he was able to bring to light about President Obama's support for Israel. Here's kind of how he summarized his comments about what a great champion of Israel President Obama has been. Listen to this.
Some of what the president has done for Israel might never be known because it touches on some of the most sensitive and strategic issues that arise between an American president and an Israeli prime minister.
And I get that. Certainly some of it shouldn't be known because it's very sensitive and top secret information, so to speak. I guess it drove home another point to me, and comment on this, if you would, Dr. Kaiser. President Obama publicly, I think, is very harsh and very critical of Israel. Behind the scenes, he's not so bad with Israel, at least as I see it. And there's some strategy in publicly chastising Israel and publicly being supportive of Iran. At least I think there's an intended strategy. What is your analysis of that, and what is that strategy, do you believe?
Well, obviously, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And I think that Obama's in the position of having to help Israel. I mean, there isn't another option, really. Unfortunately, I think publicly he's trying to find that other option. And Netanyahu brought this up in the speech, trying to, you know, come up with some kind of an agreement with Iran. That's not a good option, because it's really right. What we've got going on is a fight between ISIS and Iran to see who can destroy Israel. So, trying to, publicly chastise Israel and try and come up with some kind of an agreement with Iran is not a good option.
I would think not. All right, a quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Ken Kaiser in just a moment. He's a professor here at University of Northwestern St. Paul, where the Faith Radio Network is headquartered, offering insight on the rather historic speech of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu before the United States Congress yesterday. Back with Dr. Kaiser in just a moment. It's now 6:16, and this is Faith Radio. It's 6:19 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning and welcome. Wednesday morning underway. I'm Austin Hill. Honored to be with you. Weekday morning, 6 till 8. Dr. Kent Kaiser, a professor here at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, where our network is headquartered. He is in studio with us offering some analysis of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a rather historic speech before the U.S. Congress. How unique and historic would you say this is? I think this is the third time that the Prime Minister has spoke before a joint session of Congress, but the circumstances seem very unique here. What are your thoughts, Dr. Kaiser?
Well, it was a unique circumstance in that he came in to address the Congress and directly contradict something that the sitting administration is trying to do, which is to forge an agreement with Iran. And just going back to what we were talking about before the break, you were saying, sometimes the administration chastises Israel for things it does. And I think it's important for Christians to be in tune with this, because oftentimes what's been chastised is the building of settlements in different parts of Jerusalem. And there's this green line, as it's called, that was drawn back in 1947 after the troops had advanced so far. And it's kind of an arbitrary line, is the point. And any time that a settlement goes up beyond that line, the Obama administration considers that to be an offensive action to, the Muslim world. And Christians should care, because basically every significant Christian site is beyond that green line. So all the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, all the Stations of the Cross, and those are currently maintained essentially by Israel. And just imagine what would happen if ISIS or some other Muslim force were to take over that area. We've seen what ISIS did to the museum in Mosul. We've seen what the Muslims did with the Buddhas in Afghanistan. That was, of course, Al-Qaeda. But they destroy other cultures. They destroy other religions. They are into cultural cleansing. And that's why Christians care about what happens in Israel.
We've seen the Christian church all but eradicated and eliminated in Iraq at the hands of the Islamic State, it would seem to me.
Well, right, and we should put this in finite terms, too. They're killing people. They're murdering Christians. They're rounding them up and killing them, and this is why we should care.
I'm with you on that. Dr. Ken Kaiser in studio with us. Here's what one of the things I just do not understand about this, and you having worked in various areas of state and federal government probably can get at an answer better than most, but every U.S. president since, Harry Truman, I believe, was in office just before Israel became a nation.
That's
again,
right.
And Dwight Eisenhower took over after that, and every U.S. president since before, just before Israel became a nation again, has been supportive of Israel. That's a fact that Benjamin Netanyahu mentioned in his speech yesterday. Every sitting U.S. president since 1979, that would be since the days of President Jimmy Carter, every U.S. president has said Iran is a bad nation. They do evil things. They harbor terrorism. They sponsor terrorism around the world. We will not negotiate with them. We will not have diplomatic ties to them. None of it. That's, you know, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, all of those presidents carried out that same policy. And President Obama, even as he campaigned for the presidency for the first time back in 07 and 08, he said, nobody remembers this, nobody was paying attention, but he said, elect me and I will negotiate a new sense of openness and a new deal with Iran. What he's doing now should not surprise anybody. He's doing exactly what he campaigned on. It's just that our American media and most Americans don't pay attention to foreign policy. But then, and Aaron, if we could have that soundbite ready to go, here is Mr. Netanyahu juxtaposing the U.S. and the Iran like this. Give it a listen.
America's founding document promises life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Iran's founding document pledges death, tyranny, and the pursuit of jihad.
Okay, now that's, again, that's a matter of fact. We've got this history between the U.S. and Iran. President Obama diverts from it almost entirely. And we seem to be, our president and our government seems to be ignoring that fact about Iran. What is the strategy? What is the point here as you see it, Dr. Kaiser?
Well, I do think that I think that it's just a completely different worldview that Obama has compared to those previous presidents. This whole idea that he can negotiate with Iran and be friendly with Iran is nonsense. And he just doesn't realize that, but he wants to have something historic to leave with the United States. And I think he's just going down the wrong path.
Is it dangerous?
It is dangerous. And again, Netanyahu put it in a historical context at the end of his speech, too, again, drawing in Christians. He said in his speech, I'm quoting again, facing me right up there in the gallery, overlooking all of us in this august chamber, is the image of Moses. Moses led our people from slavery to the gates of the promised land. And before the people of Israel entered the land of Israel, Moses gave us a message that has steeled our resolve for thousands of years. And he said it in Hebrew, be strong and resolute, neither fear nor dread them. And we've always been, you know, as a country, the United States has always been on Israel's side with that same resolution.
Mm-hmm. Where do we go from here, Dr. Kaiser? Does this speech have influence? Does it maybe change the direction of, certainly doesn't change the mind of the president, but does it change the direction of our foreign policy, perhaps? Are American Christians waking up? What do you think of that?
Well, I think there's two things that, you know, a couple of things that Netanyahu was trying to do. He's got an election coming up himself, you know, here in a couple of weeks. It, I'm sure, helped him there. And I'm certain that it helped him with many American minds and with people in Congress. You know, in terms of the attention that this speech got, you know, it took place in the middle of the morning on a work day, and the number of people who watched it, and part of that, of course, was the president and other Democrats being so fussy about it taking place in the first place, but they just brought attention to it. So it was a big PR win, I think, for Israel, for Netanyahu. In terms of, you're right, I don't think it changes the mind of the president, but I do think that from a policy perspective, it clarifies why many members of Congress should be standing with Israel.
Some members of Congress who might not have wanted to be involved in whatever negotiation goes on with Iran, some who may be entirely supportive of the president, maybe even rather blindly so. By some analysis, members of Congress like that were persuaded yesterday. What are your thoughts?
I think that's right. I don't see how they couldn't have been persuaded. One of the things that Netanyahu said in the past was, the difference between him and Obama is geographic location. It brings some clarity to the situation when you're situated right by Iran. Mm-hmm. When you're halfway across the globe as we are, you don't quite have the same perspective on what that how evil that regime is.
Mm-hmm. Skyping doesn't really give you the feeling, I guess. Not quite. Dr. Ken Kaiser, professor at University of Northwestern St. Paul, with some analysis on a rather historic speech in Washington, D.C. today and its relevance to Christians around the world and here in the U.S. Dr. Kaiser, good to see you. Thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
Good to be with you. It's 627. This is Faith Radio, and I'm Austin Hill. Good morning. It's now 6:28 Central Time. I'm Austin Hill here weekday mornings 6 till 8. Connecting Faith is our program that happens at 12 noon Central Time here on Faith Radio. Yesterday, host Neil Savum spoke with University of Northwestern St. Paul Bible professor Dr. Mark Muska about his book, 50 Things You Need to Know About Satan and Demons. Here's part of that discussion.
Chuck Swindoll always talked about in Romans 11 about how unsearchable God's ways. He said, don't try to unscrew the unscrutable.
Some things we
can't really figure out.
And I appreciate the way you started that, Neil, too, because where we start, Naomi, with this is we have to come back to what we really do know from the Scriptures. Look at the things that are clearly in the light that we can hold to with a degree of confidence. And I would put on that list things like God is good and he is interested in the welfare of the human race and of his creation. And his love for us is definitive as far as what love is. We start with that and then we probe into the shadows with some of these difficult questions.
What causes spirits to attack someone and how can they stop it? She's a Christian woman, prays often. So are there some things that we do that sort of bring on more attack?
Yeah, there are the two things that I ran into the most, looking both at the Scriptures and then at some of the testimonials of people that seem to be sober-minded about this. The two main ways that we become vulnerable to demonic attack is either through open rebelliousness, not just slipping up in sin. I mean, sometimes we're overtaken by temptation and that, but it's the sin, the Bible calls it the sin with a high hand, where we are openly shaking our fist at God and saying, I'm just going to do my thing. I know this is wrong, but I don't care. Sometimes we're even audacious enough to say, well, I've got my ticket to heaven. I've asked Jesus into my heart, so I'm going to go to heaven, so I'm going to just play around like the devil in this life. That is one way we open ourselves up to demonic activities. And the other is through occultic practices. This takes many forms, very popular in our modern society today, where we have things like divination, trying to forecast the future through tarot cards, palm reading, the astrology, prophets in the newspaper, all this type of thing. Or there's spiritism, where we try to get in contact with dead departed relatives and loved ones through mediums or channels. The New Age movement made this incredibly popular over the last 30 years or so of this type of channeling of spiritual forces. All of those types of things, there are documented places in the Scriptures where they are connected with demonic powers. The Scriptures denounce it. Deuteronomy 18, God makes it clear that any sort of divination, occultic practices are to be rejected by those who belong to God. And I think the main reason for that, Neil, is because we are dependent on God for our future. we are not to be looking to other sources to tell us about our futures or about these questions that we have. God is completely sufficient to meet all our needs, and this is it's a lack of faith that is displayed when we go to these occultic powers. But demon forces, definitely, we are vulnerable to when we take part in these occultic practices.
Professor Dr. Mark Meska being interviewed on Connecting Faith with host Neil Stavem just yesterday. Now, on today's episode, Neil welcomes Dr. Mark Lasser to the program, talking about healing from sexual addiction. That's Connecting Faith, 12 noon Central Time with host Neil Stavem today. It's now 6:32. I'm Austin Hill. Good morning and welcome. It's Wednesday. SRN News on the way next.
Now, back to Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
That is our number if you wish to join us. It's the Austin Hill in the Morning program on the Faith Radio Network, 877-933-2484. What in the world are we talking about? Well, I tell you what, we had not planned to do this originally, but given demand to talk about this matter, I think we shall. Let's talk more about the rather striking case involving a 70-year-old flower shop owner in a rural part of the state of Washington who's essentially been driven from her business, or at least stands to possibly be driven out of business because of her refusal to cater flowers to a man's wedding to another man, a same-sex wedding, if you will. We talked about this yesterday here on this program at about the same time, actually, yesterday. And quite frankly, more phone callers, I got more email, and more people wanted to weigh in on this than we had time for. And so we thought we'd allow a little bit more time for it today. If you have some thoughts on this, it seems to me the question is, should the exercise, the free exercise of Christian conscience, be protected any longer here in the United States? Or, in the case of this 70-year-old lady in Washington, her name is Baronelle Stutzman, in the case of somebody like her who says, my Christian, biblically informed moral conscience cannot allow me to provide flowers to a gay man's wedding, should that just be outlawed? That really is the case. That's really the question here. And her moral conscience, acting on her moral conscience that says, listen, I've had this man. He is openly homosexual. He's been a patron of mine here at my flower shop for several years. Wonderful guy. We have a great friendship. Both of them admit that there's a friendship there, by the way. But Baronelle Stutzman, the 70-year-old flower shop owner from the small town of Richland, Washington, she drew the line in the sand and said, I cannot go and provide flowers to his wedding. That compromises my Christian faith. And it seems to me that there are a lot of Christians who would say, that's wrong. That's discriminatory. You should not be allowed to exercise your moral conscience in that way. And really what this kind of traces back to is, how much, quote unquote, religious liberty are we okay with here in the U.S.? A lot of us believe that religious liberty is pretty rapidly slipping away around the world for sure, but in other parts of the world, but in the United States as well. I want to hearken back to some remarks made over the weekend to a conference here in the U.S. This was in the state of Maryland on Saturday. A lady named Nagme Abedini, whose husband, she's an American. Her husband, who is also an American, Saeed Abedini, he is a Christian pastor from the Calvary Chapel Church in Boise, Idaho. But for almost 3 years now, he has not been home in Boise, Idaho. He's being held in a prison in Iran. The Iranian government, so the same Iranian government that our president is negotiating a treaty with, apparently, that the Iranian government declared that his activity of starting a Christian orphanage in Iran is illegal, and he's now serving an 8-year prison sentence. Here's what Nagme Abedini had to say about religious liberty around the world and how much we care about it here in the U.S. Listen to this again.
Something I always say is that I'm proud to be an American because America gave me the choice to choose Jesus. And I hope and I pray that that's something we can continue to have. Religious freedom is a core value that I believe that we've steered away from. And I believe the world is watching on where we stand on religious freedom issues. And there's been a lot of silence.
There has indeed been a lot of silence, especially on the global stage. Americans just listen. We live in a culture that's far more intrigued with what's going on ESPN tonight, or what we can download from Netflix, more so than we care about what's going on in other parts of the world. That's the culture that we live in. I believe you and I are called to be separate. We are called out to live differently, and that's one of the reasons we talk about these big global issues here on this program. But let's just bring the issue here at home. How much religious freedom do you stand with? And let me be very clear about this. This lady, Baronelle Stutzman, the 70-year-old flower shop owner in the state of Washington. I don't know what it's like being in her situation. If I were in her situation, I would probably provide the flowers to the gay wedding and move on. I do believe, for me personally, it's a value judgment for me, but I do believe that my walk with our Lord, my relationship with our Lord and Savior, would not be compromised if I sold flowers for a gay wedding. Wouldn't necessarily be excited about that, but I could live with that. She cannot. She's evaluating this situation differently than I would, perhaps differently than you would. But I absolutely stand with her and support her freedom to exercise her Christian moral conscience in the way that she chooses to. I don't know that most Americans do any longer. How about you? How much religious freedom is too much freedom, and should this lady in Washington be free to exercise her Christian moral conscience in the way that she is? 877-933-2484. Again, we're revisiting the subject because so many people want to weigh in. To the phone, Steve is up next in Fargo. Steve, welcome to the program, sir.
Well, how are you doing today?
I am very well, sir. Your thoughts on the flower shop owner in the state of Washington, should she be free to exercise her religious rights in such a way that she chooses not to participate in this same-sex wedding, or should that kind of religious practice be illegal? What do you think?
Well, you know, last time I read the Constitution, which was pretty recently, the freedom of religion is fairly absolute, and it doesn't say that you're free to worship religion in your religious buildings. It doesn't say that anywhere. You're free to worship your religion however you see fit. That is a God-given right that is enshrined in our Constitution in such a way that any person should have this right to do whatever they want with their own business in the public square, so long as it does not infringe on the life or liberty of another person.
Right.
Now, the situation that's arisen for this poor lady out in Washington seems to be that her ability to worship as she sees fit, be it through her business or so on, is being, in my opinion, is being violated, because they have determined that the rights of this gay couple to get married has somehow been trumped the Constitution. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that the two that people who are Christian should have that a Christian in their belief system or whatever it happens to be, have the right to worship however they want in the public square or in their own businesses. But I think in some cases, if their bottom line is such, you know, some people will sell out to that and say, you know, it doesn't matter what they want. It's something that every person has to come to grips with in their own personal way.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Steve, thanks very much for the call. Again, I would probably handle this situation differently than this lady in the state of Washington, but I absolutely stand with her, and I remain resolute and supportive of her liberty to exercise. Notice the Constitution doesn't just say you're entitled to your religious beliefs, you know, in your head and in your heart. We have the right to exercise our religious beliefs within very broad parameters, and the Constitution seeks to protect that. And I stand with this lady, Baronelle of Richland, Washington, and her right to choose as she sees fit with her business. How about you? It's 877-933-2484. More calls on the way. It's now 6:45 Central Time. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Glad you're here.
We want to know what you think. Join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
It's now 6:48 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Our number, 877-933-2484. As we are having, I hope, a very candid and thoughtful discussion on religious liberty, Christian liberty here in the United States of America. To the phones, Tammy is in Sioux Falls. Tammy, thanks for holding. You're up next. Welcome to Faith Radio.
Hi, Austin.
Hey there.
I have a few different views here about a few of the issues that happened with this woman. One is the government encroachment of taking and seizing her property or her business or whatever. I have a huge problem with that. I think besides not only having religious liberty, we need to make a law against government encroachment, being able to take our properties or anything like that. There's things we can do, but, you know, seeing this situation, it makes you wonder, hey, do I want my stuff seized because of what I said or what I stand for, you know?
I'm with you on that. I'm not aware yet, anyway, of the... at least not precisely and concisely, I'm not aware of seizure of her property. I mean, I think that's the threat, but if you're aware of something that's already transpired, that's news to me. Have you heard something?
Okay, no. I thought it was, something about her business, taking away her business. I thought maybe that's what was going on.
Yeah, and let me clarify. The state of Washington, the state government of Washington, threatens to bankrupt her business and her personally because each day...
Yep.
That she does not provide flowers to some of these gay weddings, she's being fined. So, in a sense, that they're trying to seize her monetary resources. There's no doubt about
that.
There
we go.
Yeah,
there we go. That's the point right there.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, you know, using some type of protection, insurance policies, have an umbrella policy where there's some type of judgment or lawsuit that comes against you, it would help. Would have helped her somewhat. I just don't know how much.
That's a great question. I don't know. One would think that there would be some kind of insurance available for this kind of thing.
There is. And the other view I have about the situation, how I don't know how it was handled between her and the people, I'm a little saddened that they had a relationship for quite a few years, and that they had decided to come to her to have this wedding, flowers or whatever. And she missed a huge, huge opportunity to be a witness for Jesus Christ at that wedding.
And Tammy, I think there's a lot of people who agree with you on that. At the same time, I support her liberties, her ability to choose when and where to operate her business, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I just wished it didn't happen in this way. I just wish that didn't happen.
I'm with you. Tammy, thanks very much. Great to hear from you. It's 877-933-2484. Joe is in Hugo, Minnesota. Joe, welcome to the program. Hello, sir.
Yeah, hi. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You know, I'm just thinking everybody's, you know, kind of focusing on the woman and, you know, her not wanting to sell the flowers. I mean, who's looking at the gay couple and just saying, why don't you just go to another floral shop?
I think that's a legitimate question to ask.
Why do you suppose
it's not being asked?
Well, because, you know, everybody's looking at the rights of, you know, other people and not the rights of Christians. I just think, you know, people are way too sensitive, number one, and number two, they're way too they want to sue. I mean, people want to sue. They want to get something if somebody offends them. Instead of, you know, we're going to be offended in life, you know, you move on, and you know, and not everybody's going to like us, but you know, everybody wants to be liked. Everybody wants to have their rights, but then you don't look at the rights of the Christian, you know, to follow their beliefs, to you know, practice you know, what they want to do.
I have that same concern, Joe, and I appreciate your call very much. 877-933-2484. Barbara is in Cottage Grove, Minnesota. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, it's Barbara the Greek, so I'm going to talk about Greek words a little bit. You know, homosexuals cannot procreate, cannot multiply, and cannot be parents. Those facts go beyond belief or faith or any religion. Facts are facts.
Yeah, and Barbara, I think we know that, and I appreciate that. I don't know that we necessarily need to revisit that fact. I'm more focused on the rights and the abilities and the freedoms, if you will, of the individual business owner. Nels is up next in Madison, Wisconsin. Nels, welcome. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Austin.
Yes, sir.
I guess, you know, I'm honored to hear that there's something like that going on in our country. Someone's willing to stand up for righteousness. I don't think it's been done enough. I think the point of your question out to all the callers was, where are we at in our walk with God to express our religious freedoms? If I'm kind of putting it together, that's what you're trying to ask the people.
You know what? We're getting at something important here. Nels, hold on a second. I got to take a quick break. I want to come back and we'll talk further about this in just a moment. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. It's 6:54. Religious liberty. This is where the rubber meets the road. How free are we? How free do we want to be as Christians? We'll continue in a moment. It's 6:56 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Nels is on the line. I want to go back to him in Madison, Wisconsin. Nels, indeed we are talking about the choices we make that render us free to exercise our Christian faith, or maybe not so free. Your further thoughts, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a situation in America where we all need to, like, really check ourselves and check our walk with Christ. Now, you've already mentioned, Austin, how, you know, you may not deal with this situation. If you were in that situation, maybe the same way. But you are excited that she's willing to stand up for her faith. And I think I feel the same way. You know, we got to walk this out individually. But we are constantly confronted with people watering down their expression of faith. And if we have a constitution that's going to enable us as Christians to stand up for righteousness, you know, the word says hunger and thirst after righteousness. Christ alludes to it in the Beatitudes. And as the apostles paved the way, you know, after his ascension, they basically kept standing up for righteousness until their death. We're not in a situation where we walk out of our homes every day and our life's on the line. However, this lady out in Washington, her business is essentially on the line because she's getting fined if she doesn't do this. Mm-hmm. But she needs to keep doing what she's doing and not waver. Because it's stuff like this. As this stuff keeps happening, this is how we can express our faith. And we can't water down our faith. Otherwise, it's gonna wash away. I mean, if she did this in a Muslim country, her life would be on the line.
Sure.
So I applaud that, and I'm thankful that I can call her a sister in the Lord and going to see her someday. And I'm excited how you, Austin, how you're going to express your faith every day on this show, and you're willing to take these calls. And you're willing to get our voice out there. So I just thank you, and you just keep doing you. Later.
Nell, appreciate the call, sir. Thank you very much. Nels, excuse me. Great to have you with us. 6:58. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to, and I am Austin Hill. Honored to be with you. Still to come, BibleandBusiness.com publisher Bill English. We are choosing. See, we're exercising our liberty here. We are choosing to allow him in the building again today, which is a major development. Seriously, though, we love Bill English. Thoughts on the plight of the small business owner under duress here in the United States. We'll talk with Bill English about that. Also, the future of blended families. All this and more coming up. SRN News next.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning. It's a beautiful day.
Hey, good morning. Welcome. 7:04 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. And I'm Austin Hill, honored to have you with us weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of the day. Blended families. All those in favor, say aye. You know, whether you or I approve of blended families, I certainly hope we wouldn't reject them, for heaven's sakes. But whether you and I want blended families or not, they are all over the place. Upwards of about 40% of all families in the United States are comprised of children from separate parents. And that's a big deal. And churches and pastors and lay ministers across the country oftentimes have a difficult time trying to figure out how best to meet those needs. Coming up at about 7:35, a guy who is just renowned. If you've never heard of him, I'll tell you, I first encountered him 12 years ago. His name is Ron Deal. Ron Deal. He's written a book about smart step families and blended families. He is recognized as the expert. He'll weigh in on some of these new statistics and very positive things going on in churches across the country about serving the needs and interests of blended families. Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com. I made a joke. This was stated purely tongue in cheek. Do you think I'm getting myself into trouble here, Brother Bill? Using humor on the program, and I said that it was a very risky but well-intended exercise of our liberty to let you in the building today. And so I said that in the last hour. Some might think that there's some stigma attached to you, or that I was being judgmental or pejorative. And I know you didn't take it that way. And
no, anyway, nice actually, to see you. I didn't. Yeah. It's great to see you. And no, I didn't take it that way. And you know, I'm the token Maple Grovian here on the show, so
is that right?
I understand how this works.
well, if the shoe fits. Be that as it may, great to see you. And how's the ice conditions in your part of the universe?
Well, in my part of the universe, the ice is cold and it's thick and it's strong and it's ever present in our life here today. So
see, and I've been to your family. You've got a couple of teenagers available at your home to scrape and shovel. How are they doing?
They're doing fine, even when they're scraping and shoveling. Although they wouldn't say that,
right?
They would say something different. But yeah, everything's good. I haven't used the burn pile in the backyard that you were at. I'm waiting for spring to come before I burn any more wood.
Looking forward to that, getting the Hill family together with the Inglés family and a little marshmallow roast or something like that.
I'm going to do this again on the air. My daughter, your son, let's make this deal. Let's just do it right now.
Arranged marriages today on Faith Radio. When we come back, Bill English, publisher of BibleandBusiness.com, on a much more serious note. We love Bill. We have a great time with him here. But on a more serious note, Bill has written eloquently at his website at BibleandBusiness.com about an issue that I think every one of us, parishioner, pastor, layperson, clergy, no matter, every Christian should care deeply about this, and this is the struggle of the local small business owner. We know that our economy relies on the success of these people and their ability to employ and provide products and services that we want and need and those kinds of things, but it's just tough. Bill English knows this better than most. We'll continue on some of the struggles of the small business owner. And if we have time, more on arranged marriages. We'll get to that coming up in the next segment. It's the Faith Radio Network. It's now 7:08. I'm Austin Hill.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 7:09 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Does our Christian faith have something to say about business, for-profit enterprise? Does the Christian faith, our biblical heritage and history and tradition, does it say anything at all about entrepreneurs? Well, in a sense, you know, Jesus was a craftsman. He was a carpenter. The apostles were working men. They were small business owners, if you will. I certainly think that for those reasons, if none other, we should seek to apply our Christian faith to the local small business owner. Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com in studio with us. You've written eloquently about a fact that just kind of rolls off the tongue. And we just kind of, those of us who follow business trends, we admit it, we acknowledge it, but then we just move on and we don't really think about what goes on in terms of the human turmoil. And the reality is this: most business startups fail. Now, what you've done, Bill English, is you've opened up the hood and looked inside at what that failure amounts to. Where do we begin with that?
Well, we begin in a number of places. You know, when I was going through my business downturn back in 2008 and 9 and again in 2013, the emotional price that I was paying was significant. And my family paid it with me. Mm-hmm. And so where I start as both as an owner, a minister, and a psychologist is I start with the emotional side of this thing. Because if the business owner is not emotionally and mentally healthy, the business is not going to do well, and they're not going to be able to make the tough decisions that need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So I start with the emotional piece.
Tell us more about that.
Well, emotionally, owners go through what we call, or what I wrote about here, is called entrepreneurial terror. And that's an all-encompassing dread that really comes out of nowhere when you start to see all the forces that are working against your business. Maybe it's the loss of a customer contract. Perhaps it's new regulations that are changing how you do business. And some of the emotions that come into play here is racing thoughts. You're going to have terror. You're going to have anxiety. Sometimes you have an inability to sleep, an inability to control your thoughts, those kinds of things. Psychologists would either point to some kind of an anxiety or mood disorder there, but it's not chemically induced. It's situationally induced, and it's something that most entrepreneurs go through at one time or another.
Mm-hmm. I would certainly think so. Bill English from BibleandBusiness.com in studio with us once again, as he customarily is on Wednesdays here on our program. You know, as you've laid this out, and as I've talked with you over the last many months, and even studying other resources about the failure of businesses, the psychology of this really is, I think, in many ways, bears resemblance to the psychology of competitive sports and the fact that there is failure in the process of being a competitive athlete. It's this emotional roller coaster that we all kind of acknowledge in a glib sort of fashion, but boy, you look under the hood, you got some real high highs, but some very painful lows as well. Does that analogy fit, do you think?
I think it does in the micro, not in the macro. Because in the macro, your ability to fail and bounce back for business owners maybe only two or three times. Whereas as a professional athlete, their ability to fail and bounce back might be literally thousands of times. I dropped the pass. I threw an interception. I missed the shot kind of thing, but I'm going to try again. And so, you know, the golfer has to make his 100 putts before he can go in at night. So it's in the micro, I believe that you're right on that.
Talk to us about the failure of a small business owner or any kind of entrepreneurial venture, somebody's failure, and how that plays out sometimes in, I want to call it, church culture, where some might look at another person's failure and say, well, maybe God is trying to tell you something here. Maybe there's sin in your life. Maybe this is a circumstance brought about because you've done something wrong. This is God's judgment on you. I mean, those things happen. You know that very well. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, and look, if there is, by the way, if there is sin in your life, the only remedy there is to confess it, right? Because we know as Christians that God is not going to bless your business and your work if you're actively, deliberately living in sin. So that, for sure, is something that can stifle business growth, so to speak, for the Christian business owner.
Right.
But beyond that, the churches often just don't know what to do with a guy who or a gal who's going through a business that is failing. I think they're sympathetic. I think they're compassionate. I think they want to help, but I don't think they know how to help. How do you help a guy who you go to lunch with and he says, you know, I've got a $230,000 payroll on Friday, and I've got, you know, $87,000 in the bank, and I don't know where the rest of it's going to come from, and yet if I lay these people off, then I'm for sure dooming this business to failure, or at least to such a small position that we're never going to really be able to bounce back. And, most people don't realize, at least in the state of Minnesota, and I think in most other states, that payroll is a personal liability of the owner. The owner can declare bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy will not cover payroll.
Mm-hmm.
Payroll has to be paid, period. And so these are the kind of stresses that happen. How churches help, boy, that's tough.
It is indeed, and yet you have also, nonetheless, written about how such failures can be reframed as experiences from which we can learn, teachable moments, if you will. And again, I don't want to be too glib or simplistic throwing out these terms like teachable moment, but that's, I think, a recognizable, relatable way to describe it. Let's talk more about that and talk about the wisdom to be gleaned from such circumstances when we continue. Bill English from BibleInBusiness.com. He's in our studio talking about the lessons learned when a business fails. And if there's a business owner in your church, I'm always quick to say, hey, ask them how things are going, because it really does matter to you and to them and to all of the community and all of the church. But when there's failure, well, Bill English has some suggestions on that. We'll continue with him in just a moment. 7:16 Central Time. It's the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Good morning. It's now 7:18 from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Breakpoint with Eric Metaxas and John Stone Street, about 8 minutes away. Bill English with BibleInBusiness.com. He's in our studios. We talk about the struggles of small business owners and what happens when a business fails. I wish we had three more hours to detail some of the things you've written here about the ways in which a business failure can be eventually, over time, turned around to produce good fruit. But in a nutshell, how do we begin to understand that?
Well, I think we begin to understand it by realizing that, A, God works everything together for good, and, B, that God rarely uses somebody mightily whom he has not hurt deeply first. That's a phrase or a paraphrase from A.W. Tozer. And mm-hmm. I think Tozer was right on that point. So when God takes you through suffering, if you're a small business owner and you are suffering because your business is either in decline or it's flat or it's just not where you want it to be, and you're suffering as a result, that suffering is an entrustment from the Lord for you to turn to him and to let him clean out your life and maybe the life of your spouse and your family, because he has greater things for you either within the business or outside of the business as he moves you along in his plan in your life.
That's tough to believe when your bank account is being cleared out as well.
Boy,
and,
it is.
And you're upside down and you're in debt and you're on the hook and all the rest.
You know, and look, I'm not just a guy talking about theory. I have been there. You know, I took over day-to-day operations of my business on January 1st of 2009, and I walked into a situation where we had $890,000 of debt, less than $100,000 in receivables, on a declining, going from $9 million to $4 million a year in sales in 2009. And yet I know what business owners go through. I know the terror. I've been there. It is tough, but it is not impossible. As you draw near to God and as you draw near to his heart, God literally changes you, and the things of this world really do grow strangely dim when you're sitting in the light of God's glory and God's grace. And I've been there, and I know that if you're listening out there and your business is not doing well, you're welcome to go to BibleInBusiness.com and give me a call. My phone number's out there, or email me. Or if you know somebody whose business is not doing well, you can certainly let them get a hold of me as well.
Yeah, I would recommend that. What would you say to the pastor, Bill English, who is hearing you describe what you experienced, and the pastor is thinking, yeah, there's somebody in our congregation who's facing this. I don't know what to tell him. I don't know where to begin. What would you recommend to that pastor?
Well, I would recommend to that pastor two things. Number one, offer to have lunch with the owner and hear him out or her out. and pray for them and offer whatever emotional and spiritual assistance you can. But number two, contact the other business owners in your church and get a 911 team together, or call it a tiger team or something like that, where the other business owners in your congregation rally around this person and become a support to that individual for 6 months or a year. And make it something constructive, make it a defined amount of time, and let them help that person through their demise.
Yeah, that's an excellent suggestion. Bill English, you can find him at BibleAndBusiness.com. His contact info is there, and he's offered to take a call or an inquiry, perhaps an email, and offer some input in these kinds of situations. And let me take it full circle here, because this is something that you and I both care deeply about, not only as parents and as men who love the church and are seeking to serve. We do have this problem. It surrounds us everywhere in the United States of America and really throughout the world, but even right here at home, there are just not enough businesses being started. I mean, we have more businesses failing. Businesses are failing at a more rapid pace than there are new business startups. We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Given what we have discussed here about failure, what do you say to the young person or even the parent of a young person who is saying, you know, I've got a business idea. I think I'm going to go out there and try it. It's rough terrain.
It is tough. And so you need to be called to this. But what I would say is make sure you know what you're doing. Get advice from the get-go on how to start the business and how to run it. You know, running a performing a specialized skill that people are willing to pay for is far different than running a business that performs the specialized skill that people are willing to pay for. Those are two different worlds. Having said that, young people, we need entrepreneurs, and I would encourage you to look at starting your own business as opposed to going to work for Medtronic or a Target or one of these other Fortune 500s. It is the time of your life running a business. It is one of the greatest things you'll ever do. It's one of the most wonderful things you'll ever do. It'll also be one of the most despairing things you'll ever do. You'll hit both ends of the emotional spectrum, but I encourage entrepreneurship in a big way.
With the highs and the lows being what they are, is there anything you can compare business ownership to? I think it stands alone, but what do you think?
You know, getting married and getting divorced, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not trying to be glib with that, because I have been divorced. But getting married and getting divorced, I think, are the two emotional highs and lows in life.
Hmm. Bill English, publisher of BibleAndBusiness.com. Find him there. Find his contact info there. And reach out and speak with him directly. Good to see you. Thanks very much for this. This is difficult, but it's necessary. And I'm glad that we're able to bring this information to people.
Well, later, dude.
Yeah. To paraphrase, never mind, it's an inside joke. Anyway, it's 7:25 Central Time. Oh, the fun we have. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Breakpoints with Eric Metaxas and John Stone Street on the way. It's now 7:35 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill, here weekday morning 6 till 8 as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of your day. Coming up before the top of the hour, before the end of the broadcast, some remarks by the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who was in Washington, D.C. yesterday speaking to a joint session of Congress. And by the way, that would mean both the members of the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. By the way, last hour, our great friend Dr. Kent Kaiser, professor here at University of Northwestern St. Paul, he was in studio with us offering some analysis specifically of the significance of the speech for Christians living in the United States. And after the program this morning, after 8 o'clock, we will have the full Full interview, my full discussion with Dr. Kaiser, available on our website at myfaithradio.com. I will encourage you now to go find it and listen to what Dr. Kaiser was describing and to take it seriously. We'll get to that, more of that coming up before the hour, before the top of the hour, 8 o'clock, so stand by for that. Last week here on this program, a gentleman named Bob Lapine was my guest. Bob Lapine, the anchor and host of the Family Life Today broadcast with Dennis Rainey. Bob Lapine had a very striking statistic that he quoted, and I was not surprised by this, but I had not heard anybody state this in no uncertain terms the way Bob Lapine did. It was the fact that some 40% of all families that exist in the United States of America today are comprised of blended families. It's a different America than the one that perhaps you and I grew up in. It's a different America from the one that our parents and grandparents knew. How might the church need to change in the face of such a changing dynamic in our culture? Joining us to talk about it, a man who has authored a book called The Smart Step Family. He works in cooperation with the Family Life Today Ministry. His name is Ron Deal. And Ron, it's good to talk to you again. I have to tell you that I began hosting this program about 9 months ago, and probably since the day after I started this program, people are saying, you got to get this guy, Ron Deal, on your program. And you and I crossed paths many, many years ago, but you've been all the buzz here in our building. We're glad to finally have you back on the program. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It is a real honor to be with you. And since you talked to my boss last week, I'm glad that we're getting some time this week to talk about blended families.
I did not know the pecking order, but we love Bob Lapine as well. Listen, this is not, while we might take in this 40% of all families are blended families, we may take that in and say, wow, that's shocking. This is not a shock to you. You've been following this for a long time. Tell us about that.
Yeah, since the early 90s, I've been working as a marriage and family therapist and also as a family ministry trainer. Been working with blended families, step families. Depends on what part of the country you're from and what term that most people use, but we're talking about step families. And no, it doesn't surprise me at all. Point number one, look at your Old Testament. How mm-hmm. many of those families were not what we would call the traditional biological family with one couple, one married couple raising their kids? Not many of them, right? I mean, all you have to do is stop and think about Jacob, and he's got four wives, and he has a bunch of sons, but he's got a favored wife with a favored son. His name is Joseph, mm-hmm. and brothers who are in rivalry with him, and you have this complex step-family situation, right? So we've always had step-families. God has always intervened and talked to and worked with and worked through people growing up and living in step-family situations. So it's really not anything new. But it is kind of the increase in our culture today is growing pretty rapidly. And I should just add that the 40% of all families are step-families is looking at households where there's children in the household, but it also includes couples where the children, they're empty nest, all right, the kids are out of the home. There's lots of people who are getting married, having a 35-year first marriage, and a spouse dies, and then at the age of 65 or 70, getting mm-hmm. remarried, mm-hmm. and they're empty nest, but they have now three generations of step, right? They have stepchildren who are in their mid-20s and 30s and 40s raising their kids, and then they have step-grandchildren. So real quickly, you can begin to see how this touches a lot of people one way or another. It may not be their household, but they know and love and care for somebody who is living in a step-family situation.
Yeah, no, you state the case very well. Ron Deal is a family therapist and author of a groundbreaking book, which has begotten other books. It's called The Smart Step Family, and he works in conjunction with Family Life Today. He's on our guest line here at the Faith Radio Network. You rattle off these statistics. You take us back to the family of the patriarchs in the Old Testament. What happened? How did we lose sight of the fact that, as you stated so eloquently a moment ago, there have always been step families, and God has always used them? How did we lose sight of that?
Well, I think part of the job of the church is to communicate about God's plan and design for the family and his ideal, if you will. And so we've done a good job kind of talking about one man, one woman for life. And, you know, how that's the foundation of society and moms and dads, husbands and wives. We've done a lot to pour into families and couples. But we haven't done a great job of saying, okay, but what if life throws you a curve and you find yourself as a single parent?
Mm-hmm.
Or you find yourself, a spouse dies, or there's a divorce for one reason or another. Nobody would have wanted that or wished that on anybody, but it happened. Now what do we do, right? And so part of what we're saying is, hey, we believe the church can be redemptive about a lot of things, right? We're redemptive when it comes to people coming out of addiction. We do things called Celebrate Recovery all across America to try to help people where they find themselves come and walk with Jesus. We have ministries that help people walk out of certain lifestyles, and we're all about redemption. Well, this is in part about redemption. It is also in part about moving the next generation one step closer to God's design. And here's what I mean by that. Kids who grow up in strong, healthy step families actually have a tendency to return back to the one man, one woman, marriage for life design.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So intervening in this generation makes a difference even in the next generation. And so that's really one reason why churches really have to start paying attention to the blended families in their congregation and in their community.
You know, this subject kind of came up in my own church on Sunday service just this last week, and our pastor was speaking on a completely unrelated topic. However, the issue of blended families kind of got woven into a sermon, and he, I guess, acknowledged a phrase that is oft repeated in churches, and you've heard it much yourself, I'm sure, Ron, and the phrase is, God hates divorce, but the pastor followed it up with a very, I would say, rather impassioned and stern remark. He said, that does not mean that God hates divorced people. Nothing could be further from the truth. And a part of our role in our church is to help rehabilitate, to help recover, and to bring beauty from ashes, so to speak. It sounds like that's really part of what you're getting at here.
That is absolutely the point. And I'm so proud of your pastor for doing that, because, again, it doesn't take a lot. But what he's doing is he's sending a message that reminds everybody that grace is there. And you know what? Here's the thing. Grace is there for those of us in first families, in biological families, you know, first marriages. And grace is there for people who are imperfect in step families and single parent families. It's the same redemptive message. We just have a tendency to kind of, you know, push people into a category and say, well, if that happened in your life, then there must be something wrong or sinful or immoral or unfaithful about you. You know, no, that's not true. We all know. We all know that we're tainted by sin, every one of us. Our sins may be different from one another, but we all kind of have the same disease, and we all need the same Savior. And really, that's what Family Life Blended is really all about. We're helping equip people where they are to walk with the Lord and do the best they can in their marriage, in their parenting, in their step-parenting, and the complexities that step-family life offers.
Hmm. Ron Deal, he has authored some extraordinary books about step-families. He's recognized nationally, I would even say internationally, as an expert on step-families. He works in conjunction with Family Life Today. Quick break. We'll continue with Ron and get some thoughts on how we might better begin a greater level of awareness and helpfulness, if you will, to step families in our local church. Ron Deal, our guest. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. It's now 7:45. I'm Austin Hill. Back in moments.
Back to Austin Hill in the morning. Questions or comments for the show? You can leave them on our show page at myfaithradio.com.
It's now 7:46 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. And I am Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday mornings 6 till 8 as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful right here at the start of your day. Some new data out telling us that some 40% of all families that exist in the United States today are comprised of blended families. Ron Deal is a family counselor and expert on blended families, author of The Smart Step Family. He also works in conjunction with Family Life Today and the Family Life Ministries on better serving the needs and interests of blended families. Where do you start, Ron, when you speak to a pastor or even maybe a layperson who wants to better recognize the current state of the family and our culture and put that into action at their church? What's the starting point?
I think you got to start in two places. First of all, you got to recognize that there's a demographic. There is a people group that is alive and well and growing fast in our culture, and that is the blended family. And people find themselves in that situation through a lot of different avenues. Sometimes it's divorce, but not all the time. Sometimes it's the death of a spouse. You've been widowed, and now there's another marriage. Sometimes it's one of the growing trends in our culture is, unfortunately, it's people having children out of wedlock and then marrying somebody who's not the biological parent, right? At some point down the road, marrying somebody who's not the parent. So there's never been a divorce. There's never been a death. It's a completely different avenue. That's a growing trend in our culture. And what we want to do is just acknowledge that they're there and then begin to communicate what I call bridges of grace that lets people know, hey, look, we're happy to meet you where you are. We want to help you walk with Jesus from this point forward. It's John 4. It's Jesus meeting the woman at the well, right? She had a sordid life and history. But what he offers her at the end of the conversation is living water. And ultimately, that's where we want to take people because that's where the hope is. And the second thing I would say to the church and to a pastor or to a neighbor who's just caring for somebody living next door to them, for example, is you got to understand a little bit about stepfamilies. You got to understand a little bit about the complexity and the stressors that come along with that. That will help you then speak a language that connects into their life. You're offering something practical at that point. If I could give you a quick illustration.
Please.
Just last week, I was interviewed by a writer from the Today Show. They did a story last week on an online video that's gone viral. The video is about a man who is marrying a woman with a daughter. And during the wedding, he expressed his vows not only to his wife to be, but to his daughter to be. And so it was a very touching moment. The video was very well done. It's had 5 million views in the last 4 days. Okay, so it's really taken off. And they were wanting some comments on, okay, so what do you think about this video? And I had two thoughts for them. I said, first of all, congratulations to this couple, and this stepdad is doing the right thing by expressing a commitment to his stepdaughter. At this point in the game, they don't really know each other. They're just beginning life. But he is starting off on the right foot by just saying, hey, I'm committed to you, and I want to really bless you in your life. I said, but here's the next thing they need to know. That expectation may take a long time before it becomes reality. The truth is, step-parents and step-children, there's a process of them kind of getting to know each other and bonding over time. And for adults, boy, adults really want that to happen quickly. Sometimes kids do as well, but sometimes kids really are slow about it, and they just don't soften their hearts very quickly. And literally, for some children, it takes years. And so to teach that step parent, you got to be patient. You got to be persistent. You got to not give up quickly if this young lady doesn't quite open her heart to you and you find yourself frustrated and just hitting a brick wall. You need to know that that's normal. But you got to be persistent in loving her as best you can. And that sort of reality is what we need to be able to teach people so that they say, okay, I get it. It is, you know, sometimes a step-parent will say, man, I am so frustrated. I've been trying so hard. I don't seem to be getting anywhere. But everybody just tells me, hey, it'll be okay. Well, it's not okay. Right. It's not okay. It's really difficult at this point. Yes, hang in there. Yes, try this. Don't do that. Lower your expectations a little bit, but continue to love this child as best you can to whatever degree they will let you love them, right?
Right.
And just realize that that's part of the journey you have to walk. Don't give up. Keep going. That sort of practical encouragement is really what helps people where they're living.
Ron Beal, it sounds like you're saying set the bar high, but recognize it may be a very challenging journey and a lengthy journey to get where we want to go.
Yeah, one of my favorite illustrations is this. How do you cook a step family? Well, it's not with a blender, okay, because blenders and microwaves are quick and fast. No, the way you cook a step family is with a crock pot. It takes 6 or 7 hours to cook stew in a crock pot. It takes 6 or 7 years on average for the average step family to really formulate their family identity and to build relationships so that it feels like family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a long time, 6 or 7 years. You know, when really what you want is that to happen in 6 hours, right? And so there's a patience and there's an understanding of the process of building relationship. And there's a learning how to deal with the other home and getting along to whatever degree you can, even though there may have been some really difficult past with the other home. You know, there's just a lot of unique challenges. And so you have to kind of get smart about how to live step family life. And that's really what we do. That's why the book's called The Smart Step Family.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Family Life Blended is dedicated to helping people understand that process and what they can do to be to apply wise biblical wisdom to building their family.
That is wise indeed. Ron Deal, author of The Smart Step Family, on our guest line. Ron, final few moments with you this morning. I hear what you're saying, and I love the spirit of helpfulness that family life and yourself and others are engaged in, and this is profoundly important. What you're describing here is also transpiring with the backdrop of a culture that, in a variety of different ways, wants to undermine marriage itself and remarriage, messages from pop culture and even from secular academia would tell us that, you know, dads and husbands and fathers are irrelevant. Government policy oftentimes at the state and federal level rewards a woman for having a child out of wedlock. Here's your food stamps. Here's your abortion if you want it. Here's your birth control. And if a woman marries the father or marries any man, all those resources are taken away. I mean, in a variety of different ways, our culture disincentivizes families from coming together, whether it's blended or not. How best do we manage that, handle those cultural pressures as we seek to do the right thing?
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that. And let me tell you what, there's a lot of things that are different between biological families and step families, but there's a couple things that are exactly the same. And when we appeal to the higher standard of grace and love and sacrifice, that's what's handed to us by Christ, and not to what culture believes is true for the individual. You know, we put so much emphasis on my individual happiness. So if that means I need to divorce you in order to pursue that, then I'm free to do that. No, Christ says you die to yourself, and that's how you find yourself. And dying to myself as a husband helps me to find myself as a married person, helps my marriage. The usness of my marriage wins when I take on the sacrificial love of Christ in my marriage. That is true whether you're in a step family, whether you're in a first family, it doesn't matter. Whether you're a single person who's not married and listening to us right now, how you love with sacrifice, your neighbor, your friends, your extended family, makes all the difference in whether or not those relationships get stronger or whether they move towards isolation and individual happiness rather than the family winning or the relationship winning. So those are the things those are the standards that we need to live by and call each other up to. And certainly the church can do a good job or should do a good job in trying to pour into people and helping them see that and understand that.
He's Ron Deal, author of The Smart Step Family. He works in conjunction with the Family Life Organization, and we've got info on Ron's book and his thoughts on blended families on our website at myfaithradio.com. Ron, thanks so much. Great to reconnect. We appreciate your good work. We look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you. God bless.
7:56 from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. It's 7:57 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, and thank you for being here. I am Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate your participation in the program. We had a gentleman, Nels, from the Madison area in Wisconsin, expressing great enthusiasm over the fact that we take phone calls on this program, and you are invited to participate. I think that's important. There are important conversations to have in the Christian community, and I'm committed to making that happen. Back tomorrow morning at 6. Tomorrow we check in with Bob Walaszewski from the Plugged In Movie Review. I'll be asking them about the Dropbox motion picture as well as others. And our great friend Kim Katola, host of the Cradle My Heart program. She'll join us as well. See you tomorrow morning at 6. Keep it right here and have a great day. This is the Faith Radio Network. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.